Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
The Democrat Party is one business, and their competitor is the Republican Party. So it's like two teams. Why do you assume that, A, they have the best interests of America at heart, and B, that if the other party wins now, suddenly they're gonna learn from having been out of office for four years, when it was fact they wanted to lose. That's why they put the imposter in for 4 years. To me, it looks like the whole thing is a charade from the beginning. So Bush and the Republicans bankrupted America with $1 trillion in debt, a war that nobody wanted but him and his contractor cronies. Don't tell me we liberated the Iraqis for what? Do you remember Bush in his early years? I have a record of all of this. Bush came out and said that we're going to be compensated with reparations from Iraq once we liberate them with oil. We haven't gotten one barrel of oil from those wonderful friends of ours in the sands of Mesopotamia. Not a barrel of oil from our dear friends in Mesopotamia. And what did the boys go over there and die for and lose faces and arms and hands and legs for? So Halliburton could charge $16 for a plate of food? People are asking. So that's over, right? That's behind us. We all forgot it already. I remember also during those years, I was the years slogging here on the radio. People would call, liberals would call the show and say, well, I'm not anti-war. I'm just anti the Iraq war. And I would say to them, well, what? How would you fight those who bombed us on 9/11? Or the jihadists who want to turn us into serfs? Put your women into burqas. How would you stop them? Well, we need the correct war. The right war would be the party line. The war in Afghanistan. That's where we should have taken the war to Afghanistan. So Obama comes to power. He takes the war to Afghanistan. And then what? Nothing happens. Back where we started from. So you don't even hear about the war. The potheads on television who have these shows who support him, blindly support him, never talk about the war, ever. When is the last time one of the deviants on MSNBC mentioned the war in Afghanistan? Never. When is the last time the drug addict on HBO mentioned Afghanistan on his show, which is stocked with other drug addicts from Sunset Boulevard? Never. So everything is a lie. So here's the game. Here's the game. So the Republicans rape us for 8 years. Sorry to put it so bluntly. Then they realize that how much can you take from the people till they almost revolt, and they go crazy. So what do? They take an unknown guy. They make sure he wins the election for the Democrats so they can blame him for everything. So Obama falls into the trap. He's such an egomaniac and a narcissist. Sure, I'll be president. You sure you want it? You sure you can handle it, kid? Yeah, I'll take it. All right, we'll make you president. Then he starts like the first month. You see him walking up Air Force One. He's like, looks tempted. Like, whoa. Well, he has a big staircase. He didn't even know. He looked terrible. Remember going up the steps for Air Force One, how Obama looked like unsure of himself? Like, oh, my God, look at this reality. It's a big plane, man. And all those bulletproof limousines and the secrets. Woo! That's big. So it took him 3 months to get his sea legs. And then all of a sudden he's acting, oh, yeah, waving like Reagan. They taught him wave in the back room, get Capricorn One, get out the... Now, when you go up, here's the mock steps, Mr. President. When you get to the top, don't look like you're in. Wave. Like, hey, make it like there's someone in the crowd. Oh, yeah, there's Millie. Hey, you know, do what Reagan did. Now, what do they want him in there for? So that after 4 years, and so 2 years now, they could blame the Democrats having wrecked America. Why? So they can come back and do another 8 years on us. I've been up all night, I swear to God. It's one of those weird nights where I thought I couldn't even go on the air today. I got mad. You know, I did a show at 7 in the morning, which for me is frightening. Then another at 10, then 11. I'm not used to this. Then the Indian buffet. And I went back to sleep and couldn't sleep. And here it is. I have more energy than ever. The thing is, though, is that you know when you're not functioning perfectly is when your memory starts to jump. And right now, truly, it's not like I have any trouble with memory. I never do. But because of the exhaustion of the last 6, 7, 8, 10 weeks of the book and the election, my mind is a little on the memory side. I could just feel it's not firing as fast as it normally does, where I can make up jokes on the spot, create beautiful ideas, paint pictures with my words, incredible energy, and also have a great memory for almost all the facts and figures I want to remember. I really found it lacking just for 1 second. You'll have to forgive me. I don't know what my name is, nor do I know why I'm standing here with a microphone in my hand. Where am I, guys? Where exactly? What are we doing here? Right. Daisy, Daisy. Daisy, Daisy, my name is Hal. You remember that? That was one of the most startling scenes in the history of the movie. Do you remember that? Kubrick's 2000, and, was it 2001? Imagine how long ago that was. 2001. That was interesting. Wait a minute. Didn't we get hit on 9/11? But like 2001, right? Yeah, it was interesting. Anyway, but I remember when I first saw that movie, like 1970, I saw it in the Cinerama Theater in Honolulu. I couldn't believe that movie. You know that movie, 2001, when I saw it, I actually worked for my PhD because of that movie. I realized that he was projecting a future where all of the people who ran the world all had higher degrees. Do you know that? Of course, he wasn't correct. Take a look at who's on Fox News, symbol shot. But having said that, the fact is, the movie was quite influential. But do you remember when the HAL 2000, when he gets into the computer's brain and starts taking apart the memory chips? And the computer talks to him. It was so eerie. It was so eerie. You know what I'm saying? The idea of your brain melting down like that was terrifying. We have secured perhaps the first copy of a tape of our Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, overheard whispering on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Listen to this.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Daisy, give me your answer, too. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage.
Listening to the sound of the Treasury Secretary as he prints more money. He has no idea what he is doing or what he's printing. It sounds like the sound of the Obama administration, actually. It sounds like it's, doesn't it? I mean, the overall administration sounds like that when you think about it. Hey, you want me to talk about my lunch? I violated my diet 3 times this Sunday today. I'm so tired of worrying about my diet. Because I have to watch one more late night show about like skulls from 25,000 years ago. Again, a meteor hit and it created every minute. What happened to National Geographic? It used to be a respectable organization. It's become the equivalent of what's that maniac with the crazy eyes on CNN who looks for horror stories? Nancy Grace. What is it? National Geographic is the Nancy Grace of our time, of the documentary world. Every minute, they have another moron from a university who tells you that there was climate change 20 million years ago that caused the bango, boom, everyone died. Every animal on the earth died. The only thing that survived were the Democrats. A meteor hit that destroyed all life on earth except cockroaches and Democrats. Ha, 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 ha. I just wanted to have a little fun. There are people in television who are like cockroaches. You can't fire them. They don't die no matter what happens. There's nothing that can get rid of them. They just had one on MSNBC. They tried to fire him, but apparently got a shyster lawyer from New York who threatened Phil Griffin of MSNBC, and they hired him back 3 days later. As I said, there are cockroaches that you can't even kill with radiation. We're talking about much more important things than an imposter in the White House. We've had him before. In fact, we've had them many times before, and some other countries managed to survive one imposter or one incompetent or one drunk after another. That's what makes America great. It's the people. One imposter, one incompetent, or one drunk after another couldn't ruin America because the founding fathers wrote a set of rules that prevented these drunks and upstarts from destroying our nation. It's called a balance of power. It's called checks and balances, something that the vermin in the media hate. They call it gridlock now. What you grew up calling checks and balances, the vermin in the media call gridlock. So if you get a communist, incompetent communist president who tries to railroad a communist policies down your throat, and you say, "Hell no, stop it! No, no, no!" They say, "Oh, that's gridlock. That mean Republicans, even meaner, nasty, racist Americans, Tea Party racists for standing up to the communist imposter." I never saw anything like this. How he gets away with it? So let's say the figure is not $200 million a day. No one knows what he's spending a day. We know it's extraordinarily high. 3,000 people in the entourage. Let's say it's not 3,000. Let's say it's 2,000. How many aircraft did he just commandeer for his vacation? After his wife went to Spain a few months ago for a nice little trip around Spain and ate ice cream. Wherever she goes, she eats ice cream, and then she comes back 10 pounds heavier and tells you to eat carrot sticks. Let them eat cake. In this case, it's let them eat carrot sticks.
Savage.
What would you like to talk about? That's the issue. Let's go to the callers of what I want to talk about. Las Vegas, John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I am a retired fighter pilot from the Air Force, flew F-16s. I got about over 3,000 hours in the airplane.
Unbelievable.
Just like you, can't stand someone else flying the airplane. I'm in a job now that requires me to travel quite a bit.
Isn't that amazing? I don't think people understand this, but I had read about it years ago that many pilots, as brave as they are, as competent as they are, hate being a passenger in a jet.
I understand it, especially when you hear the stories of, you know, they come out in the media where they've been drinking before flying and whatnot. And, you know, you're so, at least in the military, you get very high quality training. And
yes.
Some of the guys that are in the airlines, I'm afraid to say, don't have that quality training. But, you know,
I know that for a fact. I got to tell you the truth. Even years ago, when I got an airplane, I always, you know, the pilots used to have their door open in the great heyday prior to the invasion of the body snatchers, or shall we say the invasion of the freedom snatchers. Prior to the invasion of the freedom snatchers, the pilots would have the door, you know, the cabin door open, and you'd look at them. I always looked for a gray-haired guy with blue eyes, and I'd often stop, and I'd say, "Hey, how you doing? Do you have any military experience?" I would do it as a joke, and they got the joke. They understood it was no joke.
Yeah. You know, Sully, the guy who saved the airplane, was it Kennedy or LaGuardia or whatever, and landed in the river.
Yes.
You know, prior military guy. But, you know, I find myself checking the flaps before takeoff, making sure anything I can to make sure they're doing something right.
Oh, you must be fun to fly with. I'm sure you're just relaxed as can be on a 5-6 hour cross-country flight.
Well, I figure, you know, once we're up and away after about, 15, 20 minutes after takeoff, then I fall asleep, you know. But until that point.
How about on the landing? How do you handle the landing?
Landing's not too bad. If there's weather, I get a little nervous, you know, and you know, if you don't break out until, you know, 500
yep.
feet. So if there's bad weather.
Sometimes I fly on a Citation 10, and often the pilots are, some are ex-military, some are not. They're all very competent, frankly. A lot of these young guys are very competent. You know what I like the best about the landing is I love hearing the computer as it speaks. It says 50, 40, 30, 20. You know that sound? Don't you love that?
Yeah. And if it starts saying pull up, you know, that's not good.
Oh, thank you. Do the commercial jets have that computerized voice giving you the altitude?
Oh, yeah, they got all kinds of things. They'll tell you, you know, if your gear is not down or something like this, or you're low.
Isn't it true that a commercial jet could literally fly itself today on autopilot?
Well, it can, and I'm not real smart on them, but from what I understand, you can get auto land assist all the way down to the flare, you know.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that, and the strange part is that the landings on a commercial jet that are computer landings are smoother usually than some of the piloted landings. I've seen that as well.
Yeah, I like the ones when they come in and drop it in, you know, good bounce. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't want to make any comments about that because certain people might get offended.
No, I don't mean to say airline guys are that bad. I mean, really, but I will tell you.
No, come on, but you Air Force guys are definitely arrogant. You should be. You're supposed to be. Isn't it built into the breed? Aren't you supposed to be arrogant? Arrogant enough to face an enemy pilot in combat? I would say that arrogance should be required.
Oh, it's definitely required. And
hey, do they still teach the guys to kill the enemy? Or do they teach them to tip wings at them before firing?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you mean
the Obama Air Force doesn't teach you to try and negotiate prior to engaging an enemy, even in training?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Thankfully, I retired just before Obama was elected. So
God. So in your opinion, in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I talk about the killing of the Raptor fighter. You know much about that?
Well, yeah, I read up on it quite a bit. I mean, the complaint is a gold-plated fighter that costs a lot of money, and it's not earning its wings, so to speak, in the fight that we're in right now. But I mean, we got to look to the future. So,
right? Isn't it true that all things being equal, pilots of both sides being equal, that the superior plane is going to win the battle?
Well, it really when it comes down to who's sitting in the cockpit, because.
No, but let's say you're facing off against a Chinese, just for argument's sake, pilot from China. And you're both equally trained. Wouldn't the superior plane be the better judge of who's going to win that battle?
Well, it can give you an advantage, that's for sure. But, if one guy isn't having a real good day, he's not feeling good, or he loses sight, or...
No.
It's just like a sporting event. If the player just isn't having a good day, it applies the same. So.
Well, no, I look back at the Battle of Britain, the seminal battle of Britain's seminal battle in World War II. It's all in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, and I'm going to send it to you. It's under Obama's War on the Military and National Security. It should be required reading at the Air Force Academy. I think I have more information here than they're teaching some of these kids about what's happening to our country.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Shall I tell you the story of Love by the Sewer Plant? In order to do that, I have to set this up. Play the Shabub Shabub song. I Only Have Eyes for You. I want to go back in time now. And I hope that the girl involved is not listening. I pray to God.
I can't see anyone but
you. We're talking Springland, not Springland. We're talking, I don't know the town anymore. We're talking Route 42. We're talking 56. 57. We're talking a sewer plant. We're talking about Love by the Sewer Plant. First Love by the Sewer Plant. Now, this girl was so beautiful that the, like, it was like summer stock. Turn that on. They can't listen to me in the music. They got the mood already. We said it. In other words, this was a small hotel, nothing fancy. The owner was a former boxer, a pugilist. He was the one where I told you that Jackie, who worked at the hotel, got thrown in the pool. I don't remember the name of the hotel. But he was a tough guy, this guy, genuinely tough guy. And that if he got into an argument with anyone who worked for him, he beat them up and threw them off the property, that type. Everyone was terrified of him. Old school, New York Jewish kind of street fighter type. So he ruled this little hotel that he had like with an iron thumb, iron boot. He was a tough guy, and things ran right. Nothing ever went wrong. No one robbed cutlery. No one talked back. So anyway, I'm a kid. There's a kid there, and boom, it's Love by the Sewer Plant across down the thing in the river by the Neversink River. The water was so cold that when you waded across it, your feet turned blue. I'll tell Love by the Sewer Plant, but starting with the Shabub Shabub again. Now I got time to tell it. Again, they can't find it.
Again, my love must be a kind of blind.
This is unbelievable. I lost my desire to talk already.
I can't see anyone but
on the
you.
Uptake, they're not. I got a migraine. Just clicked in. Whole right side of the head is out. They don't understand this. How could the audience follow my brain? I got to make them follow. How? Explain to them. All right. Okay, turn it off now. It's 56-57, Plymouth Fury, 59-59. My uncle had a Plymouth Fury, I think. I'm not sure. Somewhere around then. Outside one of the hotels in the Catskill Mountains. I'm still young, 15. I don't know how old I was, something like that. So, fall in love, first love by the sewer plant. Here's how it is. This girl was so stunningly gorgeous, like, just really beautiful, that the theater companies would come through. They had like an entertainment in these hotels, like they call it a casino. At night they'd have entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a comedian who was terrible, a juggler, a balloon man, who then eventually the father of the guy who went on XM or Sirius. His father was a balloon man, allegedly, who went around making pornographic images with balloons, as the son does verbally. Things like that. In other words, schlocky entertainment. So, nevertheless, they thought they were artists. You got to understand that. Even though they were schlocky entertainment, let's say they could paint in velvet paintings, they're still a painter. In their mind, they're Van Gogh. They were theatrical, and everyone else was bourgeois, you know. The other people ate the borscht, and they ate the chav. In other words, they were the artistes, so they understood. So, in other words, some of these entertainers came around, and they looked at this girl, and they came running up. I was holding her hand and walking with her. We were kids. And they said, Manny, I wanted you to see this girl. This is the girl I was telling you about. And they, like, looked at her like she was a specimen of, you know, like, biblical beauty. So to make a long story short, it's just young love by the sewer plant. And what I meant was, where are you going to go when you're a kid? You got nowhere to go. So we took a walk down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill. Jack and Jill went down the hill. And it was a long slope down to the Neversink River. And there was a sewer treatment plant, which occasionally, as you well know, with sewer treatment plants, they're not exactly, they don't smell that good. But kids don't care. They can override anything, particularly when the lust hits them. So the two kids walk down the hill, they cross the river, and their feet, they roll up the dungarees, take off the shoes, the legs are blue, and they have a little moment of passion together. And it was his first moment of passion. It was not exactly on the level of a complete moment of passion, but for him it was the first of that type. So now the kid is starstruck and walked like stars in his eyes after that. There were not enough stars in the sky that night, in the black sky and the billions of stars, to equal the passion that he had for the world, where he thought he could literally reach out, grab a star, and fly away. That's how phenomenal he felt as a youngster. But then, of course, as you well know, nothing like that lasts. So what I'm getting at with the story is that it was by a sewer plant, and there's nothing more to it, and boom, and now play some John Coltrane, because there's no more to the story that I care to tell, because if I do, it'll become a pantomime, and I don't want to embarrass myself with a pantomime of something that was quite beautiful. So why don't you play some John Coltrane so they'll understand why it ended that way. Anyway, it just ends abruptly. Good jazz ends abruptly. As a kid, in Dad's car, the DeSoto, the old Cadillacs, driving over the Williamsburg Bridge, which was right over the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Remember, I go back a while in time. So how old could I have been? I don't know, but it was post-World War II, and the Brooklyn Navy Yard was bustling. Today, they produce pornography and websites in that area. The Silver Cup Baking Factory doesn't make bread. Now they make pornographic movies with actors from the Lower East Side who are allegedly famous. In my day, they actually made bread and they actually repaired ships. Today, they make pornography and repair nothing. They can't even repair a broken heart. But the fact is, we go over the Williamsburg Bridge in the car, and they had those little the grates. It always scared me. The car would make that sound, that rumbling sound. I hated it. Kids are weird. Like, the kid looks down between the cracks of the roadway and sees the water, and he's sure the car is going to fall in. And you look at your father, you think he's Superman, because he doesn't care. He doesn't even look. Means nothing. I mean, he doesn't even think about it. Why should he? No car's ever fallen through the roadway. kids are like on LSD. Kids naturally are on psychedelics because they see everything in a distorted manner. When you think about it, a kid sees things the way paranoiacs see things on LSD or mescaline. So the kid looks down through the roadway, the metal roadway, and he sees the water on below him. He figures the car could fall into the water, and he's in a state of fear. Father just drives ahead in the undershirt to go to another horrible day at work, hoping to God someone buys something so they have food on the table. Anyway, below us was the Brooklyn Navy Yard. To the right was the Domino. I used to love the Domino Sugar Company because that's where I first got my love of the sea and of the tropics. I would say, you know, kids, so I'd see like these ships unloading sugar to the Domino Sugar Plant underneath that bridge. And I imagine, like, I have such an imagination, you have no idea. I saw the ship coming and I saw the whole transit. I saw the sugar cane being grown, the happy natives with the machetes, the bales being lifted up, the cranes on the waterfront, Marlon Brando, Carl Malden, axes, hair, you know, meat hooks, the sugar being unloaded down into Domino, the sugar being made and having the grinding, whatever. And on the left side, there was the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And there were aircraft carriers with big numerals on them and battleships and cruisers and destroyers bustling in to be repaired by men who had welding irons in their hand, who knew how to fix ships. Yeah, I've got mail. You hear? That's what I have today. You hear my in the background what I have today? That's what I have today. You've got mail. Savage. I was very lucky because I had a classical high school education before I went to college and grad school. And this was Jamaica High School, Queens, New York. In those days, it was a tough school. And we had to learn a language. Then in college, I had to learn two languages to get through Queens College. You had to learn them and examine them, believe it or not. Today, you don't even have to speak English to get through Queens College. In fact, if you speak English, you're considered a racist at most colleges today. If you speak English too well, you're probably investigated by the Department of Homeland Security. Anyone who speaks English too well is looked upon as somewhat suspect by the TSA. They get a double frisking. What a country we live in. It's like an upside-down world to me. I'm like, you know, it's another world, you know. Rip Van Savage here. The reason I mentioned the Greek gods is because in high school, I had to learn the Greek gods. In high school, we had to be somewhat familiar with the Greek gods. So you say, well, what do you need that crap for? No, would you rather learn the rap artists with gold teeth or bling in their nostrils? Now, why did we have to study the Greek gods? Well, because Greek mythological culture had a lot to do with Western literature. Greek mythological literature. And some of you would know some of the names. For example, Aphrodite. If I say Aphrodite, the average person who's read anything would know who Aphrodite was. Or if I say the gods such as, let me name some of the Greek gods, okay? And some of you know it because you've had, you know, good educations. You don't have to be a scholar to know what these mean. But the average person in my day would have known who these deities were. Ancient gods and modern faces. You say, well, I don't want to know that I'm a Christian or I'm Jewish. I don't even want to hear it. It doesn't mean that you have to worship the ancient gods. In order to be an educated person, you should know a lot of things that you don't have to follow. I mean, you could know how an addict puts heroin in his arm. It doesn't mean you have to shoot heroin in your arm, for example. You know, don't be so afraid of learning. Learning isn't so terrifying. So the gods of Greece are an interesting subject, which you'll see where I'm going to get to in a minute. Who are they? Poseidon, Apollo, Artemis, Aphrodite, Dionysus, Zeus, Athena, Hera, Hestia, Ares, Hephaestus, Demeter, Hades, Hermes. Some of these you probably have some familiarity. Everyone listening to this show has heard the name Zeus, right? Or you saw a movie, The Poseidon Adventure, so you know what Poseidon. Poseidon. Aphrodite. Okay, if I say Aphrodite, what do you think of? I'm not interested in Aphrodite. Today I'm interested in Dionysus. That's why I play Dion in the Belmonts. Because Dionysus rose from the depths of ancient civilization and tore the Apollonian order apart. Dionysus was also known as Bacchus. He was the god of pleasure, basically. And as you well know, our society today is given over to pleasure to the extent that Bacchus or Dionysus would be the god that would probably rule America, other than Jesus or God himself. And our civilization is now crumbling as a result of the Dionysian elements that are within man that have been somewhat controlled that have now broken free or been let out of the cage, so to speak. As early as 186 before Christ, the Roman Senate actually issued a proclamation that suppressed all Bacchic societies throughout Italy as a conspiracy against the state. Now look where we've come to today. Look where we've come today. Take a look at where we are today, where Bacchus or Dionysus is revered, held up as the role model. And, you know, these were considered at a certain time something to be suppressed, kept underground, kept in the hidden background. And we were supposed to be rigid and self-controlled, right? Well, the question is, what's the balance? What's the balance point? Is it to let yourself go completely? No, because you wind up like that actor, whatever his name was, who was the cocaine and the hooker a few weeks ago. You don't want to be like him. Or the slut girls of Hollywood. In my day, even if they were like that, they made believe that they were ladies. Today, they hide the ladyhood in them because the degenerates who run Hollywood want their women. They actually hate women. You don't understand this. It's something that's very hard for you to understand. The degenerates who run Hollywood hate women. And so, therefore, they want women to debase themselves with drugs, with alcohol, and with sexuality. Don't you understand how this works? The degenerates hate women. So, therefore, any woman who is debased in that manner, they put up on a pedestal. That's how I see it. And so, that's I'm talking about this, right? So, madness, violence, wildness, terror, God's double nature. Is liberalism about liberation? Is liberalism about liberation? Yes, to the child, to the average child, they think that liberals stand for liberation, ecstasy, and inspiration, and they think that a conservative stands for the opposite. But in fact, your daughter is more likely to wind up in the hands of those bringing about madness, violence, wildness, and terror as a result of the liberalism that is now raging through the universities. Do you understand that? Okay. So that's what we're talking about. So which way do you want your children to go? Do you want them to be overly rigid? You can't raise a child that way today. Cannot do it. If you do, they're going to rebel and they're going to go the opposite way. On the other hand, if you're going to let them just, don't do anything I wouldn't do, that kind of child rearing. You ever hear those parents, the Marin County, Upper East Side women? Oh, well, honey, don't do anything I wouldn't do, they say to the daughter at 14. So the daughter doesn't do anything she wouldn't do, and the daughter's in rehab at 14 and a half. That's all. Goes out with a pair of pants on her. I mean, it's unbelievable to me the way they walk around today. Poor women. Poor women. I see children today. I'm just rambling. Today I'm a rambling man. Last week, I almost did a whole show last week about my feelings about children. I look at children when I see them and I feel bad for them. Little children. I feel bad for them. I look at them and my heart hurts for them. I know he's saying, well, what are you giving to the bleeding heart? What are you, a bleeding heart liberal or something? No, if I see kids... There's a lot of children in the Marin County area, and I divide my time between a number of different communities. And this is a rookery out here. Many of the liberal white families flee the city of San Francisco once they have children in order to give them an education where they won't be mugged and have their clothing robbed and their lunch money stolen. And so they come out to talk about it. They come to the safe white suburbs. I don't blame them. They're afraid to raise their kids where the kid is going to be mauled. So anyway, they're here. And they continue their liberalism here. But you see the children. And I look at children 3, 4, 5, and they're running, and they're just average. You don't like any child through the ages, any race, any culture. But I look at them and I say, what future is waiting for these kids? You know, when you have a government that is so avaricious that it will really put into debt children unto the fourth generation of this country in order to aggrandize themselves and hold on to power. They'll bankrupt us unto the fourth generation. I look at these children and I fear for them. But it's not only the monetary element that I worry about. I mean, that is a bad one, but that's not what I'm really getting at. I fear that they're going to wind up slaves. I swear to God, my guts tell me these little white children are going to wind up enslaved by the third world. And I have reason to say that to you. And the reason is that the white liberal would like to see the people of this country enslaved. They say that we exploited the world, we exploited the resources of the world, and that to them there's nothing that a third worlder can't do, that cannot do, that's not good. And there's nothing that an American can do that is good. Nothing. And so they say, well, it's turnaround, it's fair game. And they'd like to see the children in this country turned into little slaves. And that's what I fear. So you say, well, come on, that's absurd. We have the strongest military on earth. What is the good of a strong military when you have men like Robert Gates, the defense secretary, who over the weekend gives a speech and says, quickly, hush, hush, pass, don't ask, don't tell, while the Congress is not in session. This is a man who's cut one military expenditure after another that has to do with weapons systems, and now he's spending all of his time trying to push don't ask, don't tell. Why don't you ask the men who are actually taking the bullets what they think about don't ask, don't tell? Don't ask me. Ask them what they think it'll do to the military. Well, let's go another step. I read last week that the geniuses under Obama, I'm going to ask you something. I know there are brave women. I've met them. I've seen helicopter pilots who are women. I understand that there are women who can be as fine a pilot as a man. But don't you understand what happens when you put a woman on a submarine? Do you understand what's going to happen on that submarine where you have a tight, cohesive group that works together like a well-oiled machine, and you're going to put five women on a submarine? You're going to tell me there's not going to be a little vying for that woman? That's exactly what they want. They want to wreck the unit cohesion. And they want lawsuits. And let me tell you something else. If it's a choice between another torpedo and a toilet, they're going to build that toilet, and they're going to eliminate that torpedo tube. That's why I wrote Trickle Up Poverty, Obama's war on our borders, economy, and security, stupid. Wake up. It's all planned.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I think there's a mass hysteria in America that I'm partly responsible for. I have to admit, I'm the first one in the media to have talked about TSA and I'm not flying. This goes back years. You know that. I don't need confirmation. I told you I hate travel because of the thugs. I don't like the fact that all the money I've spent all my life to move to better neighborhoods and improve myself, here I am being frisked and touched in strange places by people I've avoided all my life, that I've worked in other words to get away from. So I've said that. Then it turns into this metastasis of, now we don't want body scans, now we don't want to be touched. Well, what do you want to do here? Look, you want to get crazy? Let's have another conspiracy. Osama bin Laden owns the scanning company, okay, and the whole thing was a scam. You want to put that on the internet. Go ahead. Now that's the next thing. Osama bin Laden doesn't exist. He owns the scanning company. And he's in cahoots with Obama making money. I mean, come on now. How do you want to deal with the radical Islamics who want to blow us up? I'm not going to burst the blood vessel over this right now. There's plenty of people doing it. I'd rather talk about Gainsboro Blue Bays and breadcrumbs. Now, let me tell you what I mean by Gainsboro Blue Bays and breadcrumbs. First of all, it's November 16th already, obviously. And it's a strange, beautiful time of year in the San Francisco Bay Area. We get these China blue color falls over the San Francisco Bay this time of year. It's hard to describe. So I call it a Gainsboro blue. I was calling it China blue yesterday, but that has no meaning. Gainsboro painted skies of this color. It's the closest color I've ever seen to it. It's very calming. It's very beautiful. So when I say Gainsboro blue bays and breadcrumbs, what do I mean? I mean living well is the best revenge. I still enjoy nature. And believe me, I know food. I can be Mr. Down-to-earth guy. I don't care what I eat. But I know the difference between really good food and bad food. Last night I had a book party. I didn't announce it to anyone. It was a very large book party. There were three people there and my dog, Teddy, in the calamari room of Alioto's restaurant. I had two of my friends and Teddy, and Richie Alioto joined us. And I call it my book party. But, you know, I sat in the calamari room. They have a little private room. It is so wonderful. You're like in a fishbowl. No one can hear you. And the reason I'm mentioning it is I had a piece of fish. I'm getting more excited over the fish than the TSA. Richie makes the food just for me. So I said, Richie, give me the fish. I don't want too much of this and not too much of that. Nobody here, nobody there. He knows. He's all right. Leave it to me. I'll make it Sicilian style. He comes out with a piece of fish with these fine breadcrumbs on it with no grease. And I said, Richie, what kind of breadcrumbs are these? He says, they're cracker meal breadcrumbs. I never heard of cracker meal breadcrumbs. So that was my book party. Three to four people, two friends and I and Richie and Teddy. Teddy got the royal treatment. He got a hamburger, no salt and pepper. And what happens is that when the hamburger comes out, it always comes out first. I have a certain friend who eats the burger before the dog does. He starts dipping his fork into the hamburger bowl. It's high quality. You know, why shouldn't he? We're all hungry. It's an appetizer. But I got the A-shed shrimp. See, when I go in a restaurant, I ask people, where is the shrimp from? Where is the calamari from? He says, man, get the fish. You know what I'm saying? 1-800, I know, all you want to talk about is TSA now and breast and crotch touching. Come on, leave me alone already with it. You want me to just pile on with it? What do you want them to do? No scans and no touching? So where's that going to leave you? I'd like the answer to this question. You know, there's an hysteria that's running through this issue right now, and I have to be the one to stop it. Once again, the big problem falls on my shoulders. What do you want the government to do? To stop searching you and to stop scanning you? And then what? That's exactly what Osama bin Laden wants to happen. So then the next underwear bomber is going to board a plane without it. What do you want? I mean, how do you want this done? The Israeli joke with the lead chamber that you go in, it doesn't x-ray you, but it detonates any explosives. And the next announcement is there's now a seat available on a flight to Brussels. We did that yesterday. You want a recipe for Thanksgiving? It's too soon. Next week we'll do it. But I do like Janet Napolitano's voice, where she won't answer whether or not they're going to give Muslim women a pass. Because if they do, that's the end of the road. I could think of 10 other groups that should be given a pass. You start giving Muslim women a pass, the next group, and I'll tell you, I'm dead on it. If a woman is a rape survivor, she should not be touched. End of story. If a woman is a rape survivor, she should absolutely have a pass at the airport. They should not let a woman or a man grope them. What if you're a survivor of molestation as a man? What if when you were a young boy, somebody touched you inappropriately? What, get a doctor's note? You want to start in like with medical marijuana in San Francisco, where half the people are stoned all the time and the other half are stoned half the time, which means no one's ever straight any of the time in the Bay Area? Well, they all have doctor's notes for medical marijuana, you schmucks, you. There's no such thing as medical marijuana. It's a ploy to legalize marijuana. And if that's what you want, then call it what it is. But if you're going to start giving dispensation to various people with regard to scanning and touching, there's no end to it. Rape victims, molestation victims, Muslims wearing hijabs, Muslims not wearing hijabs, Orthodox Jews, nuns wearing habits, nuns with bad habits, nuns with no habits, nuns who need good habits, nuns who have bad habits. I mean, who do you want to exclude from this? I could create the list. There are many other groups. How about children under the age of two? By the way, the Israelis do frisk. You don't know this. I mean, you say, oh, do it the way the Israelis do. Well, I was in Israel in 1979. I had a one-year-old, two-year-old child. They went through her diapers. Yeah, they're pretty smart. They know that the terrorists would use a child to plant the bomb. So let's not be stupid about this. Let's try to be rational. Let us try to help in the national quest for security without losing all of our liberty. And I don't have the answer. How do you like that? I have my answer. I don't fly. That's all. I mean, I may go to L.A. For Thanksgiving. I'm going to drive in my Chevy van. That's all. What's wrong with that? Fly less, drive more. You don't like it. How's that for fly less, drive more? Oh, then the TSA will say, well, now we have to pat you down on the highway. Every McDonald's is going to have a TSA officer in the toilet. And just for safety now, we're going to put one in every toilet owned by Michael Chertoff. He's going to provide a TSA agent with a body scanner in McDonald's rest stops. I mean, where does this end, this insanity? Who won the war, them or us? We got a government now making all of us into the... We're all guilty until proven innocent. And they're all innocent until proven guilty, and then they're innocent anyway. Who else should be excluded other than Muslims with hijabs? What a great way to get people to convert to Islam. It'd be a mass, the mass a conversion as a result of this. You know, wear a hijab and walk right through. Who's next? Orthodox Jewish women, Catholic nuns excluded from the scanner? I said rape victims ought to be excluded. Molestation victims should be excluded. How about Holocaust survivors who were told to basically strip down before going into the showers? How about the children of Holocaust survivors who are traumatized by Hitler's killing machine? They should go through the scanner. It's terrifying. I hate it. I hate it. What a different world I live in. So he won, that's all. That's because we're a nation of ninnies, unwilling to use our weapons, our great weapons. We have men who could do it, but we don't have leadership. It's like the cops, the police out there. Some of the toughest, bravest, best people in the world are wearing blue uniforms, and they're always looking over their shoulder at the vermin in the legal profession. The drug addicts call lawyers, or the lawyers who are drug addicts, either one. So how do you deal with this problem is the issue. I don't have an answer for you other than don't fly. Okay? Girls don't fly. How's that? Instead of girls fly. Oh, by the way, take a guess who's scamming us on the scanners. Let's go into the detail of who's making money off the scanners. Let's get down to brass tacks. L3 Communications is one of the groups that provides scanners. And they employ three different lobbying firms, including Park Strategies, where former Senator Al D'Amato, former Republican of New York, works. Their scanner contract, $165 million to the Gov. Rapiscan got the other naked scanner contract from the TSA worth $173 million. And Rapiscan's lobbyists include Susan Carr, a former senior legislative aide to Rep. David Price, DNC, chairman of the Homeland Security Subcommittee. Now you understand why they want to get on these committees, right? An early TSA contractor. Well, I can go down the list. It's across the board. Republican and Democrat scam artists are involved. One of the biggest, in my opinion, is Michael Chertoff, the former head of the Homeland Security, deeply involved with Rapiscan, according to studies I've read. So there's money to be made. So first you scare people. Then you give a report while you're in the government. You put in the scanner. Everyone, oh, what a good idea, put in the scanner. And then you leave the government, thank you very much, and you go to work for the scanner company. That's how it works. So you could argue Osama bin Laden doesn't even exist. He did all of this in order to make a scanner money. You don't know anymore which way this all ends. You know what I'm saying? There's no way to know this hall of mirrors. The whole thing is a hall of mirrors. We don't know who is behind it now. How it's going to end. It's just like a crazed system. And you can't really blame Napolitano. She's incompetent, yes. She should have been replaced by now with someone who has real security experience. But she hasn't been. Apparently Obama doesn't want to replace her for whatever the reasons are. And I have nothing against her or for her. She's just incompetent. There were four near terrorist acts in 2009. She missed all of them. Just by accident, they were stopped. You know what I mean? Had nothing to do with TSA or LSMFT.
Savage.
You know, we're not doing this just to do it. We're doing it because we need to keep powders and gels and liquids off of planes that are unauthorized, just as we need to keep metals off of planes. Now, this is being done in recognizing that we all have a collective role in our security. And we all know and can recognize that there are threats and risks that have been articulated.
And, those we just come in from the bowling alley, a couple of girls, we're out bowling, and we're working on it. We're working it down. We got to keep the gels and the powders out of there. And it's a risk-based system. And you got to understand that the airport, I mean, you know, just something we know a lot about here. And as I say, me and the girls are down at the alley. We're shooting a few down at the lanes. And we're going to resolve it to the satisfaction of the American people. Now, if you got to be frisk once in a while, you know, dummy up and just take it. I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, it's what we do down here anyway, so what's the difference? I understand in San Francisco, this is normal behavior anyway. I mean, they go out in the clubs, and this is what they do at night. So what are you belly aching at the airport? You know, lighten up a little bit with this Victorian behavior. You know, lighten up a little bit. You might like it. I don't know. That's why I say, you know, what? Maybe my idea of driving more is a good idea, or going nowhere is a good idea, but here's a horrible story. TSA pats down a screaming toddler. How's that for one? Wood chipper accident kills a tree trimmer. Oh, God. Oh, God. One woman dead, twin sister wounded at firing range. Wood chipper accident kills tree trimmer. That's the stuff for a nightmarish movie. Freak accident in California when a rope to which he was attached became entangled in a wood chipper. Antonio Barajas, 33, suffered a fatal head injury. Oh, God, I don't even want to read this. Climbing rope caught in a tree limb being fed into the chipper. He actually didn't end up in the machine. Nevertheless, it's horrible. He has an eight-month-old son, so life is horrendous. That's why I say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow may never come. You don't read the Bible. You think you're here forever, right? You got to have a good time also. You got to enjoy yourself. You got to laugh at authority. They have all the power, so you can laugh at them while you're complying. I mean, what are you going to do? You can laugh at them still. It's still legal to laugh at them. It's not yet a dictatorship. George Soros came out and said that China has a better government than the United States. Isn't that wonderful? George Soros, that kind-hearted, freedom-loving, America-worshipping immigrant, George Soros, said that China has a better government than the U.S. It's not as cumbersome. How is it that all of these psychotic liberals who escaped Nazism want Nazism? How is that? Does anyone understand this? What is this, some kind of syndrome? How is it that all the liberals who kind of fled Hitler come here and now they want to reimpose a sort of liberal Hitlerism? How does that work? They of all people should be sensitive to an intrusive government. And yet here there's a China has a better government. And that putz Thomas Friedman, the same thing. He loves China, loves the Chinese government. Then move there. Go take a job in China, Friedman. I think Soros is kind of making nice to China because he knows there's liable to be an investigation of the Managed Funds Association under the Republican administration coming in January. And as I point out in Trickle Up Poverty, yes, Trickle Up Poverty. Yes, the Wall Street chapter, the best chapter ever written about the meltdown in Trickle Up Poverty. There could be an investigation of George Soros and Hank Paulson by the incoming Congress. So maybe he's cozying up to China in order to move there. How do I know what he's really doing by saying such a foolish thing? China has a better government? The new watchword of the liberal sadists is this. The liberal sadists say, there's too much gridlock here. China has no gridlock. Well, Hitler had no gridlock. Mussolini had no gridlock. Pol Pot had no gridlock. Gridlock doesn't exist in a dictatorship, schmuck. Gridlock exists in a democracy, moron. Go tell that to Thomas Friedman, the putz of the New York Times, or George Soros. They're all in love with dictatorships all of a sudden. And left-wing dictatorships, you understand, mind you. Does Jenna Napolitano get to be scanned or touched when she flies? I don't think so. I think she's allowed to, like, waltz right through. All right. Well, I'm a private group here. Set aside here. All right, people, get set aside. We're going to go on a little bowling expedition here. We're flying off to Denver for a little R&R. We're going to check out the bowling lanes. And we got to put them aside. Turn off the scanner. Turn the scanner off. No touching here. This group is... All right, that was me. Let him ride through. It's like a rope. It's like the velvet rope now. Who gets touched? Who doesn't get touched? Who gets scanned? Who doesn't get scanned? It's becoming like a nightclub. It's like who gets a dispensation to not get scanned or touched? All right, you go to that side. It's like the showers. It's frightening for Holocaust survivors. You know what I mean? Men here, women there. You go through, you don't go through. You go in the showers, you don't go in. This is awful. There's got to be a better way. Dogs are not a bad idea. Is there a security expert who can tell us, let's be realistic, can a dog do the job? Can a dog sniff all sorts of explosives, even liquid explosive? I mean, they use them for the drugs. They got a good nose on them, 200X our nose. Can a dog do it or not? Which animal has the best smell? Maybe we could put them at the airport. What if we wound up with elephants instead of TSA agents? What if it turns out the elephant is the best has the best nose? Would you subject yourself to an elephant?
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Ron, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor. Hey, Sunday morning, I'm in the coffee shop. I go here every morning. Some left-wing nut comes out of nowhere, spills my coffee all over the book. I just got done reading the Acorn chapter.
Wait. You were reading it in a bookstore, or you were reading Trickle Up Poverty that you had bought in a coffee shop?
No, I was reading it at a coffee shop. This is a place I go to every morning.
I'm saying, but it was your copy that you had purchased?
Hey, I said, what's wrong with you? You know, did you see where you're going? He's like, oh, I'm really sorry. He goes, oh, what are you reading, Savage? I'm like, yeah, how did you know? Oh, I saw the cover. I said, oh, well, you owe me a book. He goes, well, that's your fault for reading the book.
Like, so that was an assault. You know, you could have had him arrested. You know that.
I told him, don't ever come into my coffee shop again.
Well, wait a minute. Your coffee shop or a place you go to?
Well, I just get treated as a VIP there, that's all.
Well, why don't you make a police report and describe the individual so if he comes back, you could have him arrested?
Well, I might do that. I've never seen...
Listen to me, Ron. Let me tell you something. You've got to fight back at every level the way the rats have been fighting against this country from the beginning. Use the law to your advantage. You are the victim of an assault. If a man purposely threw coffee on your book and said so, which he did, he has committed an act of assault against your property. You know that?
Yes, he did.
All right, so you can now file a complaint against him. You go to the police. You have the police come to the bookstore or wherever you want in your own house. Here's the incident. Here's what happened. He looked like this. He was a white male, 5'9", whatever he was. I don't know his name, but if he comes back, I will call you. And you got a case. Now you have it on file. Now you bother the police with this. That's what they're for. They're peace officers, aren't they? How do you know this lunatic won't come back the next time with a gun or a knife or a brick or a chair since he got away with hitting you, throwing coffee on your book? This is how the rat works. The rat tries a tentative attack. If the rat gets away with a tentative attack, the rat escalates.
Hey, Michael, when I went to go buy your book, it was sold out. I had to wait over a week before they would get it. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Where in Michigan? Where in Michigan?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, beautiful city. There are actually rapids in Grand Rapids.
People are waking up here, too.
Ron, I'm going to send you another copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Put a plastic wrapper around it and put it in a poncho the next time you go read it in a coffee shop. Virginia, Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I called to validate your point about the START Treaty. I used to be a nuclear weapons officer in the Army, and you're not the only person that's very upset and extremely angry at the way the president is handling our nuclear defense. And if people think that he can just give away 30% of the weapons that are on our inventory and our stockpile without there being some ramifications, then he's more insane than we already think he is.
Well, we won't go to what you're implying, and I don't even know what you're implying, truthfully. However, in addition to taking down 33% of our nuclear weaponry, the START Treaty that he signed requires the United States of America to destroy 50% of our strategic bombers and 50% of our ballistic submarines. Are you aware of that, Bill?
Yes, sir, I am. And we can't.
Well, wait a minute. Does the military not understand this? I know that the military is under the reign of the Stepford wife, Bill Gates, who seems to think the most important thing is don't ask, don't tell, more important than what Obama the Destroyer is doing to our country.
Sir, they're bound.
And what do you guys think of Admiral Mullen? Admiral Mullen, another Stepford wife. What do you think of him? Does he have the love of the troops down the line?
No, sir, he does not. They're bound by their duty. Officers in the military are bound by their duty, and they're going to be stuck saluting the flag and doing what the officers appointed over them tell them to do until it's too late.
I understand how the chain of command works, but we now have a commander-in-chief who, in my opinion, is a naked Marxist and a traitor. There is no other word. There's no longer any words for a man who would do this to this country. I mean, you could argue with him about economic policies and health care. We could all have a healthy argument about that on different sides of it. But when it comes to destroying our nuclear strike capacity, destroying our bombers, destroying our submarines, this is no longer a debate. This is total insanity. It is treason. By any other name, there's no other name for it. What, because he's the president, he can't be a traitor? Where in the books is it written that a traitor could not wind up in the White House? Tell me where it's written. Show me a history book that says it's not possible for a traitor to wind up in the highest office.
I agree with you. He's a quisling. It's exactly what he is. He's a quisling.
Yes, quisling is the correct word. It's synonymous with the word traitor. Very few people know who quisling was. You probably do.
Once you give away, and this is something that I know from personally being in that business for many years, Once you give away those pieces of equipment, once you give away those weapons and you destroy them and you take them apart, there's not another manufacturing facility that's going to put any weapons back together. They're gone. They have limited life components.
Well, I'm going to shock America right now because I think maybe we have enough listeners that this something that very few people know. I've said it a few times on the air. I need to repeat it now. Do you know what George Bush's father did when he was president to our nuclear ability? Do you know what G.W. Senior did? Are you aware what he destroyed?
Yes, sir, I am. I was part of the CFE treaty when he was commander in chief.
Right. Bush Senior, another internationalist, had all of our nuclear weapons known as blank, created by Sam Cohen, destroyed. He destroyed all of our neutron bombs. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Very few people know this. I don't think that Professor Glenn Beck knows this. He hasn't yet heard this show. But I'm sure tomorrow the glasses will be on and the blackboards will be running. But again, to all of my students in the media, George Bush Sr., international socialist, took down all of our neutron bombs, destroyed all of them. And I know it because I had Sam Cohen on my show when I was a local talk show host 15 years ago or 13 years ago when I was still local. I was shocked when Cohen told me that the Pope had declared that weapon a humane weapon. Did you know that? I mean, I know an awful lot about this. I had Sam Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb. I interviewed him. It's one of the greatest interviews I've ever done. In fact, I'm going to try and get the tape. I found it the other day. It's a gem. And Cohen, the developer of the neutron bomb, said that Bush Sr. had all of our neutron bombs taken apart, deactivated, and there are none in our nuclear arsenal. The neutron bomb, as you know, if it's dropped on a city structure, kills life, but it does not kill the structures. It does not leave rubble. Now you say, well, what are you talking about? How could that be humane? Well, why would the Pope have declared that a humane weapon? There was a reason for it. When you look at the destruction of cities like Nagasaki, Hiroshima, non-nuclear cities destroyed, non-nuclear waste such as Dresden, London was destroyed almost down to the last brick by the Germans in their firebombings. So in other words, it's a horrible Hobson's choice. But if you have the choice, you don't destroy the civilized structures. No one is saying you should destroy people. I hope people understand that. No one is saying destroy people and don't destroy buildings. That is not what I am saying. But if your back is against the wall and you have to respond to an enemy, you don't have to destroy all of the infrastructure of their civilization to do so. I guess that's what Sam Cohen was saying. Would you agree with that, Bill?
Yeah, I would, sir. A lot of people don't understand the tactics and the techniques that go behind nuclear warfare. There's tactical nuclear warfare. There's strategic nuclear warfare. You know, strategic nuclear warfare is difficult to win because if I throw a 100-megaton weapon at you, you can throw 200-megaton weapons back at me. Tactical nuclear warfare, on the other hand, is a little bit different. If someone sets off an 8-inch atomic weapon someplace in the Middle East, is the rest of the world going to start throwing cruise missiles and intercontinental ballistic missiles or launch a bomber with a 100-megaton weapon in it? Probably not. But yet the enemy has that capability. The enemy, at any time, Osama bin Laden offers up money all the time to get his hands on atomic demolition munitions. He offers up money to get his hands on small-scale nuclear weapons that they could use or turn
into. Right, he could break the back of America with a strike. It wouldn't matter. Or he would break the heart of America. We'd never retaliate, particularly when we have none men in the White House and we have pacifist, socialist, communists in the White House.
Savage.
You expect perfect people to be president? If you did, you'd never have a president. So, I mean, I don't expect Obama to be perfect. Don't get me wrong here. But when you have a president who is failing so miserably that even his own party wants him out of the picture, and that I'm saying Obama is the new Chamberlain, and the reason I say that will be disclosed a little later on in the show. I mean, I wrote a whole book about it called Trickle Up Poverty. I'll say it over and over again. You know, I would do want to, or whatever. I couldn't believe that one of the first things Obama wants to do when he comes back from eating ice cream with Russia. Do you know what the START Treaty is? No, you don't know what it is, but it has to be ratified by the Senate. And right now they can ratify it because there's a lot of quislings in the Senate on the Democrat side. You have to understand what Obama wants to do. It's all in Obama's war on the military and on national security. This is very serious stuff. He signed the START Treaty last May, but I'm getting ahead of myself. You don't know what the START Treaty is because the fellow travelers in the media have made you not understand what the START Treaty is. They don't care about America. In fact, they'd like to see us crippled so that we'd be like any other nation on earth, no longer the exceptional nation that perhaps your grandfather or father died to protect. Why does Obama want to work down our capacity for responding with nuclear missiles? Why does he want to put us in a subservient position to Russia and China? I'll let you figure it out. He signed a deal with Medvedev of Russia, and now he wants to push it during this lame duck session. So while we're out buying turkeys, he wants to turn America into a turkey. I know those are simple words. I understand it's made for effect. You may be in a car or a house, and I'm not going to read you from the book. I'd like to, but I know many of you don't want to hear it. And so you have to read it yourself. Obama's war on the military and on national security. It is more important now than when I wrote it. The bottom line is Congress must not ratify START. Must not ratify START. And I'm begging you to tell me, where is the Republican opposition? Where are the so-called blue dog Democrats? Each day I wrote, it's as if a hostile foreign power has taken over the United States of America. And our elected officials don't have the spine to stop it. Did Obama lose a war somewhere that I missed while taking a nap? He has a unilateral desire to demilitarize the United States of America, jettisoning our missile subs and nukes at the same time the dragon is rising. He wants to cut our nuclear arsenal. Did China agree to stop developing ballistic submarines? Did China agree not to expand its navy? This is a repeat of history. It's a repeat of history, and Obama is the new Chamberlain. And I'm being kind when I say Obama's the new Chamberlain. Chamberlain was a Tory, no less. And Obama's a pan-Leninist. So when I say Obama's a new Chamberlain, I'm being very kind, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, I'll tell you more about it on the Savage Nation. He dismantled the car industry, dismantled the best healthcare system in the world, and now he wants to dismantle our military by pushing through an insane nuclear treaty with Russia when America has clearly signaled that it doesn't want that treaty. This treaty is the result of the mentally disordered academic left. What else do we have in sound? Oh, here's one. Oh, this is red meat for the right wing. NPR, as you know, is a communist front group, long-time communist Maoist front group that should be put out of business yesterday. Most of them are incompetent dolts who couldn't get a job if they didn't live off the fat of the land. Here is a reporter on NPR where the reporter says that Al-Qaeda is a good boss. Listen to clip 10.
Bruce Hoffman says Al-Qaeda Central is just being a good boss.
A good manager also knows when to step in and provide the top-down guidance that can take an idea off the drawing board and implement it.
And that's what's kind of different, since they hadn't been doing that before?
I think there was much less of it.
You know, guidance, you know. Which schools did you go to, Bruce? You're such a smart boy, chick. Do you understand what we're talking about here? This is NPR, an American organization, supposedly, that steals tax dollars in order to give salaries to idiots who couldn't get a job in commercial radio, who are going up on the air and glorifying the men who are murdering our boys in Iraq and Afghanistan. Listen again to Bruce Hoffman and Dina Rastin of NPR in clip 10.
Bruce Hoffman says Al-Qaeda Central is just being a good boss.
A good manager also knows when to step in and provide the top-down guidance that can take an idea off the drawing board and implement.
And that's what's kind of different.
Did you hear what he just said? Step in and give the guidance to take an idea off the board and implement it? He is glorifying the enemy. Me, I'm in charge. He's tried on sedition. And his fat behind goes into a jail for other traitors. However, if I were boss, there wouldn't be enough prisons to hold all of the traitors I'd throw into the prison cells. Let me tell you that right now. Listen to how this starts in clip 8.
Investigators are working under the theory that al-Qaeda's core leadership may have had a hand in the foiled attack. One reason? The plot was just too sophisticated for AQAP to pull off on its own.
AQAP has shown itself to be so deviously or fiendishly clever.
Bruce Hoffman runs the
security
studies program.
Do you hear this college boy? Fiendishly, deviously clever. Another little, a couple of pat phrases from this snot-nosed freak. Can you believe the kind of garbage that they put out on NPR now giving aid and support to our enemy? Glorifying them? These throat-cutting, woman-hating, America-hating, freedom-hating throwbacks? And you pay tax dollars to NPR thanks to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. I got to tell you something. When it first came out, Boardwalk Empire and HBO, remember we had a whole thing. I watched it twice. I didn't like it. The character of the corrupt mayor who built it, one of the first mayors of Atlantic City, the totally corrupt one, you know, in bed with all of the gangs and this and that. I said some of the lines are right out of today's political world. The writers are now finally hit their stride in this episode where they say to him, why do you want him to be mayor? And they said, because he's useful. Another line is, do you think only good men will run for the presidency? If only good men ran for the presidency, we'd have no one running. Things like that. Some of the lines were amazing. Why is it liberals sneer? That's the one thing I don't understand. Why do they all have smirks on their faces when they're making comments? Everything's a smirk on MSNBC. Why do they have that nasty smirk? Where'd that come from? What does the smirk mean? Every time they make another sophomore comment, there's a smirk attached to it. Like it's all a college joke. This is about our national sovereignty and our national survival. And therefore, we need to get rid of the idea that the smirkers are in charge. They're not in charge. Hell no, we won't go. Don't let Obama, don't let the Democrats, but most of all, don't you dare let these Democrat quislings, this is a Senate thing, by the way, don't let the so-called blue dog senators sign the START Treaty. I don't know what neighborhood you live in. Check out your state and see which one of them is a so-called conservative Democrat. I don't know if there really are any. I think it was a ploy to get elected. You know, what does anything mean anymore? What does it mean anymore? I'm a cynic, and I'm a realist, and I'm a pragmatist, and I love America. And I don't expect perfection in myself or in others. Having set that up as a preamble, that's like saying, I know that politicians generally are on the take. It's been the way of the world since Roman days. People get into power so they can gain power or money and do favors with it. Okay. That's what motivates them. Otherwise, they wouldn't go into it. They'd go into something else. So that's a given. However, there was always a line in the sand, and that line was national security. And there was a line of morality that most didn't cross. The line was blurred first under Bill Clinton, and now it has become an avalanche of a blur under Obama, where there is no line in the sand with regard to national security. I wake up every day, and it's as though a foreign power has taken over my government, is how I look at it. And I try to find out what damage they have done today. Tsar Nikolai is now in the White House? How did we get czars and no one said anything but a few people in the media? How is this possible? Why weren't they thrown out? Why were they not thrown out immediately? Why is Janet Napolitano still in power? She's failed at every turn to protect us from a terrorist attack. It was either by happenstance or by a civilian jumping up and stopping it. Why can this incompetence stay in the job of Homeland Security? Why is there no investigation of her? Why is there no investigation of the former Treasury Secretary? Why is there no investigation of people in the Managed Funds Association? Answer, because I watch too much television.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I'm a superstitious man, I must tell you. Although I'm highly trained in science, as you know, I am a superstitious man at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive, incidentally. And many of you say, well, how could you kind of believe in God and read your horoscope? I said, because they're not mutually exclusive. I'm not rigid in any, you know, area. I'm not one thing or the other. Maybe I'm too many things, I mean, to be fair to the discussion, but I am an American in that regard. I'm a mixture of things at this point in my life. For better or for worse, no one's perfect, but we are a product of our education, our experiences, and all of that. So to make a long story short, I'm a superstitious man. It must have been 30 years ago. I was living in the Hawaiian Islands, and I used to go back in the valley, Nu'uanu Valley, I believe, and there was a stream that coursed through that valley. Obviously, there were rocks in the stream. I remember being in the back of the valley and coming upon a petroglyph. A petroglyph is an ancient Hawaiian stone carving of some kind, but they all had spiritual value to the Hawaiian people. I found that it would have been of some value at the time, probably today of immense value. I knew it was a valuable antiquity or artifact, let's put it to you that way, which would become an antiquity. I looked at it, I thought about it, and I placed it right back in the hollow in the water. Nope, I don't want to carry that around. And I'll tell you another story. Once I was in Israel back in 1978, 79, I was thinking of moving there. I didn't move there for many reasons, but I went to a town on the Golan Heights, or near the Golan Heights, called Sfat. And it's a pretty ancient town which had some amazing houses made of stone. And I could have bought a stone house up there for $12,000 at the time. I knew it was a steal. I knew what would happen because I saw that the religious Jewish people were living there. I saw that the artists were coming in from everywhere. And wherever artists go, you know, that becomes very valuable housing eventually. It's what the Hamptons was built on. De Kooning and the others were living out there in the Hamptons when it was farm country, and eventually the camp followers arrived and turned it into a bourgeois paradise. So I saw this house in Sfat for $12,000. I knew it was a good deal, and I refused to buy it. I said, I am not going to capitalize on a spiritual quest. I won't do it. And I left Israel. So I'm not looking for a halo. All right, in a way I am. I'm saying I'm not, but in a way I'm trying to burnish my halo. Everything is self-serving. All right, yeah, Paul was writing All His Vanity. Did he write All His Vanity? Who wrote that? Whoever can tell us who wrote All His Vanity wins a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Is there an expert in the audience on spiritual matters? Was it Paul or Joe and Paula Farginiggan? Who wrote that, All His Vanity? Ecclesiastes. I knew him well. He wasn't a bad guy. Sometimes I couldn't get along with Ecclesiastes. He could be a real pain in the neck, I want to tell you. First of all, his name set him back. His parents didn't do him a favor by calling him Ecclesiastes. Can you imagine a little child? Ecclesiastes, can you come here, please? Ecclesiastes, you didn't put your shoes under your bed. Ecclesiastes, go pick the olives. So that right away gave him an inferiority complex with a name like that. They couldn't have named him Sam or Ben or Harry. They had to name him Ecclesiastes. So I knew the guy wasn't a bad guy. I personally knew him. It was Ecclesiastes, huh? What would you like to do today? Take a call? I mean, I'm asking myself, really. I'm thinking out loud. I'll tell you what's bothering me. You could see I'm bargaining for time on the show today, right? You could feel there's a stall. There's a stall here, and I'll tell you what it is. I've worked my heart out for the last month on telling you about trickle-up poverty. I want you to buy it for Thanksgiving because I think you're going to need it. It's a very important book for the table and for the holidays. Buy it, you know, for your relatives. And I've done that, and I'm going to do a little bit more of it, believe me. But here's the thing. I may be traveling to when I'm going to take an airplane flight, especially with the frisks and the x-ray job. Now, it is true that I hate to travel even without the frisking and the x-ray job. I just don't like flying to begin with. Even though I'm flying, I don't like flying. Now, that's not a paradox. You don't understand this. It's about control. The reason I love boating is because I'm piloting the boat myself. I don't particularly like being in a car if I'm not driving it. I'm a person who must be in control. Now, you say, are you the only one like that? No. I mean, I read stories years ago of pilots. pilots who flew 747s at the time who were totally nervous flyers when they were passengers. They had to drink 2, 3, 4 wines to sit in the seat. When they were behind the pilot's seat, they were okay because they were in charge. They knew what was going on. You follow what I'm saying? It's a control thing. There are some people like myself who must be in control of their lives. So to even go to the dentist is a thing that they don't want to do. Like today, I went to the dentist for another evaluation prior to another implant. Not a heart implant, but another pin that broke last year, a titanium pin, which I still don't understand. Did you know that story? Almost a year ago to this day, I had a tooth implant. Tooth pulled out, implant put in, tooth put over it, everything fine. And then in December, Mitt Romney wanted to have dinner with me, which we had, by the way. You don't know about this. I haven't talked about it. He's a very nice man. Him and I, one-on-one, in the North Beach area, we had dinner. Very, very, got along well. I got very worked up. I went home, and I told Mrs. S. about the dinner with Mitt Romney, and I forgot what I was doing. I bit into a piece of hard bread, and I snapped off. I heard a crack in the mouth. Bing. The pin snapped. I said, oh, my God, here we go again. So the pin broke. So then already we have a whole new story. Now they had to do a bone transplant, which the guy didn't tell me was a cadaver bone, and I was afraid I'd become like a liberal or a communist. I mean, what if the bone was from a commie, I thought? You know, maybe there was a little DNA left over. They say they scrub it, but who knows? And I was, you don't know, or like, if you're going to get a bone, I would much rather have had like a synthetic piece of plastic put in my head. But the crackpot dentist who sold me the defective pin then put the bone in. After it was done, then he said, he didn't ask me, do you want a cadaver bone or a plastic implant? I would have definitely chosen the synthetic. Because like for months, I walked around like there was like a Frankenstein in me. I was waiting for odd things to happen with the cadaver bone. You remember I joked about it on the radio about the cadaver bone, how weird it was, like having someone else's bone in your mouth? Like right next to my nose on top of it. I can't explain. It's very icky. It's just too intimate for me, the whole thing with someone else's bone in my mouth. I can't explain it. Because this wasn't a chicken bone. This was a Homo sapiens. You know what I'm saying? This was not anything. So anyway, I go today. It's a year later. The bone is in. I still haven't had the implant put in, the new titanium pin, because it's a one-shot deal. If they do this and it fails again, what are they going to do? So I waited a year, and I went to see an expert this time instead of a shady crackpot. And, the other one was weird. He did it was like a weird thing. I don't like dental offices where they have open stalls. You see a guy like, you know, spitting out Lavoris next to you while you're having like surgery, and there's eight of you like you're like a Purdue chicken on a line. Who wants to be in that situation? I felt like a dental school. It was like the Bronx School of Dentistry. This guy has some racket going, rushing from mouth to mouth. He should have been a Seamus in a pickle factory instead of a dentist, this guy, which is a ritual circumciser, for those of you who don't know old German. Anyway, he's a dentist, and they developed a thing with open chairs, and I'm sitting there. It was so humiliating. You know, the guy next to you is like, you're laying there with your head back, half obliterated with God knows in your mouth, and next to you is a guy spitting out Lavoris, staring you in the eye. So I'm never going to go back to that crackpot. So I go to an upscale today, top-of-the-line periodontist, finally. I go to the dignified, terrific guy. So the dog is with me. Teddy's with me in the car. The young man who drives me, I figured I'd leave Teddy in the car with him. But the dog doesn't want to be apart from me for a second. Not a second. So I go in, and I say to the young lady, I said, do you mind if I bring my dog in? She's not really. Nah, it's okay. She says, we'll bring him in the back door. So Teddy now, I'm laying back. The guy, Teddy jumps on my chest, and he's guarding me as the periodontist is probing my mouth, which was very cute. The dog is so protective. That's the beautiful thing about dogs. Absolute loyalty. Total loyalty. So, and I said to the dentist, you know, it's a different world than the one I grew up in. What a world it would have been if I could have taken Tippy into the dental office with me when I was a kid. He could have bitten the dentist, and I would have been out of there in 5 minutes. Tippy's the dog that I had as a kid. Remember I wrote about him years ago, bit me right down to the bone? That was a vicious half chow. Ugh. My father always liked mean dog. He knew all a different world. It was a different world. He liked a tough dog, came from a different world. I like a wimpy, like attack poodle. I have a wimpy pit poodle, I call him. He's 100% poodle, 10 pounds, but I named him my pit poodle just for a joke. But he's not trimmed like a poodle. Don't get me wrong. It's not like one of those ugly poodle trims. He's like, he's got a little teddy bear. So anyways, on my chest as the guy's probing today, and I here's the point of the story. So I said to this expert periodontist, I said, let me ask you something. Are there different quality titanium implant pins? You know, he said, sure there are. He said, there's different manufacturers. So I said, you mean to tell me they're like Rolls-Royce titanium pin manufacturers as opposed to a Prius implant? Yes, he said. He said, we only get the ones from the Nobel company in Sweden who invented them. So right away, I said, wait a minute, maybe that other dentist, the guy with that bad clinic type setup, maybe he bought a defect, you know, like a cheaper pin, and he built the, you know what I'm saying, he made $10 more on it. You don't know. You don't know what they're putting in your head. Even down to the pin, someone's trying to screw you. My father was 100% right. He taught me, trust nobody. Everyone will rob you if they can. Everyone will take from you if they can. Trust nobody. Was he wrong? He was a cynical guy. I mean, he was a Russian immigrant. What, was he wrong in the world he came from? Everyone, he said, is out to take from you. Don't be a moron. From the time I didn't even know what a moron was. Didn't trust a soul. Okay, you say it's no way to live. The American way is trust everyone like a schmuck. You know, when they knock on your door and tell you they're the gas man, let them in so they can kill you. That happened last 2 weeks ago in San Francisco. A young woman, a nice woman, good-looking woman in her late 30s, early 40s, a crackpot, a maniac, goes around with a plastic helmet on his head and a flashlight and a utility belt, and he knocks on every door in the building ringing bells. Hello, gas man, you got a leak. I got to put the leak out. No one lets him in but this woman. He rapes her and kills her. You hear? I don't like gas men to begin with. I don't like the guy who like looks at the meter. I don't like it. It's like the TSA. Was he looking at the meter for? In this day and age, they have to send the guy around to look at your meter? I always say to him, why are you coming to my house to look at the meter? Why can't you do it at the home office? He's, well, we're not set up for that. I said, well, it's only 2010. I mean, you can't put a computer in and see how much gas I used? So now they're coming up with a so-called smart meter. To me, you want to know what this is all about? Government intrusion. So they can come and look at your house and look in the window.
Savage.
Harold on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I got a good story for you. Listen to this. My sister was here from Ohio this weekend, okay? And she reminded me, Spring Glen. It's 1960, 1961, 1962, like this. I'm about 4 or 5, she's about 7 or 8. And they would have the casino up in the bungalow colonies, remember? So they have.
Well, let me explain what that is. A casino was a sort of separate building where they had entertainment and acts and things like that, like a little theater.
This is true. So they had the casino. Now, we were little kids. You couldn't go into the casino. They wouldn't let us go into the casino. Who knew what went on in the casino? We had to go to
right.
bed at night.
Right. So you thought it was something really risque, but it was kind of innocent by today's standards.
Exactly, was innocent by today's standards. So one weekend, I don't know how they did it, but they had this traveling troupe of midgets. Midgets came up, and they were on the bungalow colony, and it was in the casino, and they let the kids come in to see the act. So the midgets, they're tumbling, and they're jumping, and they're running up and down. There was this one midget who was very amorous with all the women, all the mothers in the casino. Now, it was a weekend because all the fathers were up there. So this one little midget, I don't know how he did it, he gets down real close to the floor, and he starts looking up under the women's dresses. The men catch on to this, and they don't like it. They run the midgets out onto Route 209. I remember it. The midgets got in the truck.
Oh, you mean they didn't today? They wouldn't run them out. They would be tolerant of the perverted midget.
It was the...
Today, they would wonder if they could say anything to a perverse midget. They're afraid they'd get sued by somebody from NYU. They'd say that although the midget was on the floor, he was an oppressed minority. And he had an obligation to look up women's skirts because he was deprived of this as a youth.
The funniest thing, I was a little kid and I...
They ran the entire... This sounds like a Fellini scene, running midgets out onto a highway.
It was the funniest thing.
But Harold, here's the main question I got to ask. It's very delicate. Were the midgets Jewish?
Well, I don't. You know, you asked me this question once before. I don't know if the midget would choose or not. I don't know. It was bad. It happened up in the Catskills.
It just shows you what happens when you mix midgets with regular people.
The best.
They really ran him off the property, the midgets?
They ran him off the property. They ran him out onto Route 209. I remember it because I still go up there.
Were the midgets able to grab their valises before they left? Seriously now, I mean, do you know the full details?
I was there. I remember it. I mean,
they packed up their valises or they left their midget belongings in the room?
I believe they left their midget belongings there. Because.
Oh, God. This is a triple crime. In today's world, running midgets out onto a highway and making them leave their possessions, can you imagine what kind of lawsuit they would have had today?
The men got so angry, they ran them right out onto the road. It was hysterical.
Yes, those were the days that if anyone looked at their children wrong, the men would have beaten them up and thrown them out on a highway, naked probably.
Remember, they would have the Chow Chow truck would come up. He would have Chinese food. We would get Chinese food out on the road. These things are
gone. Oh, that must have been real healthful. Oh, yeah, Chinese food in a truck. That gives a new meaning to the word roach coach.
It doesn't happen. These things don't happen anymore.
No, but could you imagine eating Chinese food? I mean, you take your life in your hand in San Francisco in some cases. I mean, the restaurant, let's say, where you got to go in and have a pair of galoshes to go to the bathroom is a pretty good giveaway that you don't want to eat there, okay? That's to start with. Where the water is like a quarter of an inch deep.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Ron, welcome to in a coffee shop.
No, I was reading it at a coffee shop. This is a place I go to every morning.
I'm saying, but it was your copy that you had purchased?
Hey, I said, what's wrong with you? You know, did you see where you're going? He's like, I'm really sorry. He goes, oh, what are you reading, Savage? I'm like, yeah, how did you know? Oh, I saw the cover. I said, oh, well, you owe me a book. He goes, huh, well, that's your fault for reading the book.
That was an assault. You know, you could have had him arrested. You know that.
I told him, don't ever come into my coffee shop again.
Well, wait a minute. Your coffee shop or place you go to?
Well, I just get treated as a VIP there, that's all.
Well, why don't you make a police report and describe the individual so if he comes back, you could have him arrested?
Well, I might do that. I've never seen
Listen to me, Ron. Listen to me. Let me tell you something. You've got to fight back at every level the way the rats have been fighting against this country from the beginning. Use the law to your advantage. You are the victim of an assault. If a man purposely threw coffee on your book and said so, which he did, he has committed an act of assault against your property. You know that?
Yes, he did.
All right, so you can now file a complaint against him. You go to the police, you have the police come to the bookstore, or whatever you want in your own house. Here's the incident, here's what happened, he looked like this, he was a white male, 5'9", whatever he was. I don't know his name, but if he comes back, I will call you. And you got to now you have it on file. Now you bother the police with this, that's what they're for. They're peace officers, aren't they? How do you know this lunatic won't come back the next time with a gun or a knife or a brick or a chair? Since he got away with hitting you, throwing coffee on your book. This is how the rat works. The rat tries a tentative attack. If the rat gets away with a tentative attack, the rat escalates.
Hey, Michael, when I went to go buy your book, it was sold out. I had to wait over a week before they would get it. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Where in Michigan? Where in Michigan?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, beautiful city. There are actually rapids in Grand Rapids.
People are waking up here, too.
Ron, I'm going to send you another copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Put a plastic wrapper around it and put it in a poncho the next time you go read it in the car. But Doug Richardson, the editor of Jane's Missiles and Rockets, examined the video for the Times of London, and he said he was left with little doubt of what it was. He said it's a solid propellant missile. You can tell from the efflux, meaning the smoke. Richardson said it could have been a ballistic missile launched from a submarine or interceptor, the defensive anti-missile weapon used by Navy surface ships. Now, the question is, whose Navy surface ships and which Navy's submarines? The best guess right now is that it was China. And China was saying, listen, buddy, you want to play war games? You want to come into the South China Sea and flex your aircraft carriers around? I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do what we did to you in 2007. None of you remember what happened in 2007, but that's what you pay me for. That's why you pay me, and that's why you listen to me. I have in my hand the article from November 10th, 2007. Strange date, isn't it? November 10th, 2007? Why isn't today November 10th, 2010? Goodness, it's 3 years to the date. 11-10-07. What happened on November 10th, 2007? 3 years ago to the day. Only Michael Savage has put two and three together and come up with the Navy and the Defense Department saying, well, when it comes to strange missile launch contrails, we have a policy, which is don't ask because we won't tell. Well, 3 years ago, the U.S. Navy was on an exercise near China. And a Chinese Song-class submarine popped up in the heart of a recent Pacific exercise at that time, right near the vast USS Kitty Hawk, a 1,000-foot supercarrier with 4,500 personnel on board. How did this happen? Apparently, the U.S. Navy was embarrassed. The Americans had no idea China's fast-growing submarine fleet had reached such a level of sophistication or that it posed such a threat. One NATO figure 3 years ago said the effect was as big a shock as the Russians launching Sputnik. Where did it happen? It took place 3 years ago in the ocean between southern Japan and Taiwan. It was a big embarrassment for the Pentagon. Now let's go back. November 07. Wasn't old G.W. Bush president, the newly popular, newly invented George W. Bush, who Wallbanger has the... I don't understand how you people don't see through this, that Rush and Wallbanger are front men for the Republican Party. I don't know how many times I have to tell you. I am the Tea Party of radio. I am the Tea Party of radio. They are mouthpieces, water carriers for the Republican Party. And Bush was a fiscal socialist. What are they reinventing the guy for? Bush built up the government bigger than four administrations prior to him. Now all of a sudden he's the wonderful senior president from the past. He's sort of a Republican Jimmy Carter, bobbling around, signing books. He spoke fiscal conservatism, and he gave us fiscal socialism. So let's go back 3 years. Old Bush was the president. And all of a sudden we have big aircraft carriers surrounded by a cordon of ships to protect it. And what happens? The Chinese slip a submarine that is so silent in the middle of it, pop up next to our aircraft carrier, and our Navy is busy trying to impose diversity. The Navy is spending 40% of its energy trying to see how they can put women on submarines rather than they spending time figuring out how to stop an attack by a Chinese submarine. It was certainly a wake-up call for the Americans, said Jane's Fighting Ships. It would tie in with what we see the Chinese trying to do, which appears to be to deter the Americans from interfering or operating in their backyard, particularly in relation to Taiwan. In January, China carried a successful missile test, shooting down a satellite in orbit for the first time. So how did this happen? How in the world can the Kitty Hawk, a 1,000-foot aircraft carrier, which is surrounded by a dozen other American warships, which are out there to protect the carrier from hostile aircraft, that's part of the costly defensive screen, which also includes two U.S. submarines, and they couldn't detect this Chinese submarine. Now, what does that have to do with now? Let's go forward. I read you a story from November 10, 2007. Now, 3 years to the day, November 10, 2010, there's a missile trail off the coast of Catalina. And only Michael Savage, the author of Trickle Up Poverty, is putting two and two together, and I'm telling you that I agree with Jane's. This was China saying, sorry, you're no longer the superpower you thought you were. Sorry, we can slip right through your defensive shield. We could sink your aircraft carrier anytime we want. But let's go back to the U.S. Navy under Mr. Mullen. Mike Mullen, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen. Defense Secretary Robert Gates. Over the weekend, before Congress comes back into session, they're obsessed with their social contract with the radical left that has taken over this country. Cheers arise from my audience. These men are not fit to run our military. These men are running our military off a cliff. And instead of making certain that we are safe, they're doing the exact opposite. And now when we have a missile trail off the coast of California that even that experts are saying was clearly a launched missile, they're saying we have no idea what it was, but don't worry, my darling. We know it was not anything to worry about. Leave it to Janet Napolitano to strip search your little girl. That's right. Give up all of your freedoms. Remember what Ben Franklin said? Do any of you remember what Ben Franklin said, that funny guy with the weird Ben Franklin glasses stolen by the hippies? Ben Franklin said, those who give up a little of their freedom for a little security will have neither. And so you let them use Al-Qaeda. You let them use 911 to take away a little of your freedom a bit at a time. Then they created a new monstrosity called the Department of Homeland Security, which instead of protecting you, is now making you the enemy. Making you the enemy. You are now the enemy of Homeland Security. That's right. You have become the enemy. They will not define terrorism as Islamic terrorism. They will not define Islamofascism as Islamofascism. They will not define the wars we are at as wars. You are the enemy to the Department of Homeland Security. And that's what this last election was about. You don't know this because none of the dupes in the media will tell it to you, but I will tell it to you. 60 Democrat socialists were thrown out, not only because they've wrecked the economy through their drunken spending and corruption and criminality, but because they have impoverished our national security, they have impoverished our Defense Department, they've impoverished every aspect of our life. That's why they were fired. And if all of the senators were up for election, I can guarantee you, 60 of them would have gone as well. Savage. So here we sit, awaiting Thanksgiving. I myself, it's my favorite holiday, favorite American holiday. I understand the Brits leave the country during that holiday. They don't even understand it. Most immigrants don't celebrate Thanksgiving. They don't even understand the significance of it because there's no longer any citizenship tests required. Most young white chicks don't eat turkey because they're vegetarians who live on white rice, getting beriberi of the soul. But I myself like to make a turkey. I know all the tricks. I know all the tricks. So get now for the Thanksgiving table, all my friends. Get now for the Thanksgiving table, all my friends. Get what now for the Thanksgiving table, all my friends? Get your ducks in a row, my friends. Get your arguments lined up. Don't just sit there like a turkey yourself. Why can't you go to the Thanksgiving table and converse? Why can't you talk about borders, language, and culture? Why can't you pleasantly... Well, I know it'll erupt into an argument, but so what? That's what families are for. You can't argue with strangers. You're liable to get hurt. That's why God gave us families, so we can argue with them and not get hurt. At least that's how I see it. It's actually quite logical, isn't it? I mean, you can't go out into the streets and argue with a stranger without a risk of getting murdered or beaten up. But you can go to a Thanksgiving table and try to reason with unreasonable relatives. You can talk about the impoverishment of America over the Turk, couldn't you? I mean, maybe the children want to hear adults have an adult conversation. You don't want to just sit there like a dummy yourself. You want to be like human cranberry sauce, sitting there melting in the candlelight? I can't go for those kind of things. So get thee for a Thanksgiving table. Confront lib relatives. No, I don't like that sound. I never liked chicken coops or chicken yards. I don't like it. They're hysterical. They sound like the League of Women Voters before a Democratic caucus. Play it again. Let me hear for just for a second. I want to see if I recognize any. Yeah, that's the Marin County League of Women Voters. Whenever Hillary came to town. That's when Barbara Boxer has a caucus. That's what it sounds like. Yesterday was a day that looked like I did nothing. And then at night as I went to sleep, I said, you know, this was a remarkable day. What did I do? Nothing. So it started out on the beach. I needed to get some air, and I happen to live in Northern California near San Francisco. There's a tunnel you can drive through and be at the beach in 10 minutes over the headlands of Marin County. It's an old ammunition tunnel, by the way. I don't know how many of the people who ride bicycles through there know that, but the tunnel was built as an ammo tunnel for the military in World War II. So I went out on the beach. It was a gloomy, cold day, and I walked and walked and walked. I collected flat rocks. And as I picked up these absolutely smooth flat rocks, I remembered they were once hills. And I thought of myself walking as a spirit through time. And I said, you know, doesn't that take a little of the pressure off you to realize that these rocks were once mountains and that you're just merely a man walking through time? So, yeah, all right. So I got back to my real self, you know, the naturalist self. And after doing that, I went to an Indian lunch buffet. Say, well, what's remarkable about that? Well, I'll tell you what's remarkable about that. Normally, I go to these things and I eat the vegetable stuff, and I try to avoid the lamb, and I eat a little of the chicken, the tandoori chicken. You know, $8.95 all you can eat. I'm not a fat guy, so I eat a plate and maybe go back for another one. I got there 1:45, and they close at 2. Scattered a few tables talking. That was it. Everyone was through eating. I said, could you put more lamb in there? I was in a lamb mood. I never eat it. I feel bad for the animal, and I don't like the high-fat diet. I knocked off a plate. There was nothing but bones left. I'd been sick, and I really needed the carnitine, the fat, and the B12. I was craving it. I knew I needed the carnitine, the fat, and the B12. There was grease on my hands and my face. I took it in the back room so no one could watch me eat. I really wanted to enjoy myself. So the Indian guy who owns it, I saw on the second pass when the bones were rising in the plate, I saw the eye was going up already. You know, he saw a money loser. In the middle of the buffet, the phone rings. My hands are greasy. Now, this is a tough one. You got two greasy hands and a greasy mouth. The phone rings. I knew it was a U.S. congressman calling, and I knew I had to take the call. I had given my number out to his assistant because he said he had to call me about something. Took the call. Hello, congressman. How are you? Michael, he said, remember a few months back you said you would help combat vets when they came back from Iraq? I said, yes. He said, well, there's some wonderful combat veterans running for office, and I agreed to help them. And I'll tell you more about that at another time. I'm giving you a day now, a day in the life of Michael Savage. Went home, took a nap. Then I had dinner that night. I went to dinner with two remarkable men. One is a very close friend of mine, maybe my only friend. He is an inventor, a philanthropist. He drives me crazy. I drive him crazy. But we love each other because we love each other. That's all there is to it. The other man is a new friend of mine. He's a producer. He's a film producer, director, and writer by the name of Rupert Hitzig. He did one of my favorite movies of all time, Wolfen. Years ago, he did Electric Light and Blue. He did Jaws 3D. And Rupert loves my show. Rupert says I'm one of the greatest storytellers he's ever seen, and he's seen them all. He worked with Alan King. He's worked with really talented men in the entertainment business. And he says, really, you're unbelievable. When you tell a story, he says, no one can top you, except he topped me. We're having a pizza and a little soup and a salad. And he starts to tell me a story that I said, are you making this up? I said, well, what are you talking about? His mother and father, listen to this story, a short version. They had 7 children. And then after the 7 children, the mother ran off with his violin teacher and married him. I said, what? That's impossible. That can't happen. Now, how we got there was he said, you're a great storyteller. I remember the story you're talking about, Lido Beach, Long Beach, Little House, the half man, half woman, the Bronzes. He says, I grew up there. I said, you grew up in the, yeah. He says, my stepfather was Italian. We lived in the Italian enclave out in Long Beach where it was half mafia and half this. Half. So that's how he got it. He says, and then he on the side, he tells me the mother ran off with Italian violin teacher. So I said, wait a minute, tell me the rest of this. Are you making it up? And I looked it up on Google. It turns out it was true. But there was more. His mother, who died recently at age 95, was one of the first pilots, female pilots, in the world. And she's on the internet. 1928, the woman was a pilot. It's unbelievable. A friend of Amelia Earhart. I said, how did your mother, a friend of Amelia Earhart, wind up marrying your father, who came to this country at age 13? And lived on the Lower East Side and sold newspapers to pay for food and lodging before he went to Columbia and then became a famous physician. How did this happen? Well, I'll tell you the story in a minute. That night, I like to watch movies at night. I click, click, click. Most of them are junk, you know, but sometimes you hit a good one. This was on the Sundance Channel, and it's a mixed bag on Sundance, 40 Shades of Blue with Rip Torn. And the way it's played out, it's a purely adult movie. It's something that many people would consider very slow. But if you like this kind of movie, it's like reading a novel, like a slow novel. So that was that. Then I had a little nightmare at night. Maybe it was the lamb. Maybe it was a mixture of the movie. I don't know. I had the same repetitive nightmare I've had for 20 years, came back in spades. But this time it was a box within a box. It was the same nightmare of me being stranded in London, not being able to get on a plane back to New York. And no matter how I tried, I couldn't reach United Airlines and there were no seats left. And I had no hotel room. Every hotel was sold out in London. Virtually, I was homeless again, planeless. But this time, the dream was I was awake telling everyone, this is the dream I've been having, but it's really coming true. I don't know why I had the dream. I have no idea. I don't know where this comes from and why. What triggers this whole dream sequence? That was my day from morning till night. Savage.